Morning. Justice Miller Lerman would ordinarily preside in the absence of the Chief Justice, but because she is participating by WebEx and I am here in person, she's asked me to preside, which I'm happy to do. Who is arguing for the appellant this morning? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear what you said. And you are? Okay, so you're both senior certified law students. All right. You may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Rachel Tomlinson Dick, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Brunson, in this matter. With your permission, I will speak on behalf of Mr. Brunson, and my colleague Jaden Barth will handle the rebuttal, for which we'd like to reserve 4 minutes.
Do you realize it's up to you to watch the clock and save the time for her?
I do, Your Honor.
All right.
We've sought appellate review in this matter because the district court abused its discretion in denying Mr. Brunson's petition to set aside his 1988 misdemeanor theft conviction. In our briefing, we discussed the various factual and legal grounds informing our position, and today we would like to take this opportunity to highlight the following. First, because the district court did not clearly disclose the factors upon which it relied in denying Mr. Brunson's petition for set aside, Mr. Brunson is left to speculate as to why he was denied relief, and we can only look to the record and make inferences about the reason underlying the court's decision.
Does the statute require such a finding be made?
No, Your Honor, it does not. But our contention is that either on the record from the hearing or within the order, it should be relatively clear the factors upon which the court relied, because those factors are statutorily mandated, both for the sake of the petitioner to be able to know why they were denied relief, and also for the sake of any appellate court that may hear an appeal.
The legislature has in other contexts required specific findings, but has not here, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And so the legislature knows how to require specific findings, but apparently chose not to. And you're familiar with our case law, which says unless the statute so requires, the district judge is not required to make findings, correct?
Yes, and we agree, Your Honor, that the district judge is not required to make findings. Our contention is simply that it should be relatively clear on the record the factors upon which the judge relied in reaching the decision.
I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller Lerman. So what is it that the trial judge said? Do you have some inkling as to the basis of the explanation? And was the explanation tied to any statutory factors?
Yes, Your Honor. There are indications on the record, and some of the things that were said are tethered to statutory factors, and some of them are wholly irrelevant and involve a lot of speculation on the part of the court. And our contention is not necessarily that the lack of clear findings or clear reasoning is what amounts to the abuse of discretion, but rather that contributes to the abuse of discretion, and that we can only speculate based on the record. And based on the record, there were comments that would lead a reasonable person to question the basis of the court's decision. We believe that this court's opinions in Patno and also in the 2002 case, Gibalisco v. Gibalisco, are instructive on this matter.
What do you understand the basis of the court's decision to have been?
One issue which kind of underlies a lot of the other kind of interconnected issues is that the court seems to have grounded its opinion entirely on a misunderstanding of the effect of a set aside. And we're not arguing that in and of itself a misunderstanding of law would amount to an abuse of discretion, but reasoning based on a misapprehension of what the impact of the decision would be.
Did the state do anything to correct possible misapprehensions on the part of the district judge?
Yes, Your Honor. Actually, both sides attempted to correct the judge's misapprehension, but the court continued to speculate that, you know, for example, this would cause employers to not be able to see Mr. Brunson's criminal history, which that would be.
That comment was actually made before the state's correcting of the misapprehension, wasn't it?
I believe that is correct.
So what statements were made by the court that give you concern after the state corrected the court's misapprehension?
The court just basically made a cursory statement that they would take it, that she would take it under advisement. And then we saw the order issued without, you know, any findings, which based on how incorrect the court's statements regarding the law and the effect of the law were, I would imagine that it would be wise to clarify that there was a clear understanding of how their decision would impact the public welfare, which by the statute must underlie the court's decision making. Turning to Patno and Gibalisco, so Patno established a reasonable person standard for reviewing whether a court abused its discretion in handing down a criminal sentence. So there, this court drew the line at a judge's comments on the record during sentencing that demonstrated reliance on irrelevant factors such as personal beliefs and values, where those comments could cause a reasonable person to question whether the court was acting with bias or prejudice. And significantly, this court found it necessary to remand that case to a different judge, even though the sentence.
How many times have we cited Patno since then?
I don't have a precise number off the top of my head, Your Honor.
It's a rare circumstance, you would agree.
I do agree with that. Absolutely.
But you're contending this is one of those rare ones.
We do contend that, Your Honor.
What's the bias?
So I think the Gibalisco case that I mentioned is also very helpful in understanding what our contention is. So in that case, this court applied the Patno standard actually outside of the criminal sentencing conduct, our context, to find that a judge had abused her discretion in a family law matter when she had previously adjudicated over another hearing involving the parties, and then she made a decision in the later case without having heard any evidence from those parties in that case. And this court held that that violated the Patno standard and rose to an abuse of discretion, because a reasonable person could look at that holding and say, I'm not sure where the basis of this came from, and would be able to question the impartiality, whether the judge was making that decision based on what was in front of her in that hearing.
Assume for a second that we disagree with you about the applicability of Patno and Gibalisco. Where does that take us?
I believe that still would take us to there being some questionable reasoning and irrelevant and untenable factors that were considered, even not applying those tests. Looking at the few rare occasions in which an appellate court has reviewed a lower court's decision under this statutory scheme, they applied a test of looking to whether a decision was based on reasoning that was untenable or unreasonable. And we believe that under that standard as well, an abuse of discretion still occurred. So in conclusion, our concern here is the integrity of the process. I reserve my remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning, Matt Lewis. May it please the court, Assistant Attorney General appearing on behalf of the state of Nebraska. This is Mr. Mark Brunson's direct appeal of the District Court of Lancaster County's denial of his request to set aside a misdemeanor theft conviction from 1988 under Nebraska Revised Statute 292264. Mr. Brunson claims that the District Court abused its discretion in its denial, citing several comments made by the District Court, which he believes were not relevant under the grant provided to the court in 292264. You know, set out, there are a series of factors contained within that statute that are govern what the court can consider when it looks at a set aside. Subsection 4 of 2922.64 says that the behavior of the offender after sentencing, the likelihood that the offender will not engage in further criminal activity, and any other information that the court considers relevant. As set out in the state's brief, that's a pretty broad grant. And there's not a whole lot of case law dealing with set-asides and specifically even commentary, you know, generally in an abuse of discretion setting, there's not a whole lot of commentary on that either.
If you remove the commentary between the parties in the court here, what evidence is there to support district court's decision in this matter?
Removing the commentary. So
the issues of the appeal.
Yeah. So if we were just to go on, if the hearing consisted of just the exhibits that were submitted and they took it under advisement and everybody went to their neutral corners, the statute does not require that the court provide specific findings on the record for why it's denying. I think that if the parties came in, evidence was submitted consisting of Mr. Brunson's prior criminal history, and the court then released an order saying no, effectively, that we probably would not be here because the statute does not require that specific finding to be made.
No, I'm asking what evidence you believe the court could have based this upon that was presented to it in this hearing.
Yes, there was a fairly long exhibit. I think it's 27 pages long, documenting Mr. Brunson's prior criminal history that the court showed significant concern for on the record. That documented not only the length of his criminal history, I think this was one of his first offenses or his first offense in 1988, and then spanned something on the order of 12 arrests and 20 convictions all the way up to 2017, I think was his last conviction.
I beg your pardon. I think what we're trying to get to is, regardless of what the trial court may have said with respect to its regard for this particular statute, what was the evidence that is in the record that would support the outcome? And in particular, what evidence that's in the record did the judge refer to which would support the outcome?
So if I'm understanding the question correctly, the outside of the comments that the judge refers to, or the materials that the judge refers to during the hearing, is based around the recentness of his last criminal conviction, and then also the frequency of the criminal offenses during sort of the after the point of the sentencing of the offense that they're looking to set aside. So they're looking to set aside this offense in 1988. And the factor of sub 4A, the behavior of the offender after sentencing, I think the district court judge specifically says, you know, the behavior of Mr. Brunson after the sentencing on the offense that you're looking to have set aside, with the exhibits that you're showing me, showing that, you know, we have this continued criminal history, including a recent criminal offense, would support, is in part support of denial. She doesn't go out to say, you know, specifically in support of denial, but you know, discusses that specific fact at length. And then also, you know, that sort of dovetails into sub 4B, the likelihood that the offender will not engage in further criminal activity. I think that that set of that evidence and that set of facts is what she what the court decided that they were concerned with when it came to the exhibits that were offered regarding Mr. Brunson's criminal history.
I beg your pardon. And the reason that we know that the court was concerned about this is because what, as reflected in the record? The court said, this gentleman isn't ready, or these crimes are recent, or regardless of whether or not I like the statute, he's not worthy because of XYZ. Were those things stated by the court?
Not that he was necessarily not ready. I would say that sort of implied in the recentness of his last offense is the, look, well, these are crimes that continue to happen.
There was a colloquy, was there not, between the judge and counsel about the criminal record?
Yes.
And it was fairly extensive.
Yes. Colloquy. Yes, it spans from 1988. Again, you know, it's a 27-page long document that is handed to the court containing Mr. Bratz's criminal history. And then there's sort of extrapolations after that by the district court about, well, you know, he's applying for certain certifications and licenses. You know, what could be the implications of that if he commits another crime? What could be the implications of that upon the decision of this court? So there are implications in the colloquy and in the discussion that takes place about his criminal history, the recency and the length of the criminal history.
That document that was received by the court, did that criminal record that goes out, and does it show what cases are set aside on it?
Yes, it did. It included that there were, and there was commentary during the hearing that several of these have been set aside. We are currently seeking set asides for them. I believe his most recent conviction, they said that he was seeking to have that charge set aside, or that conviction set aside, as well as some explanation on that recent offense and how that recent offense came into play, to try to correct the record a bit on and add some meat onto that conviction.
And is that the same type of criminal record that others would see if they made a request for his criminal record?
That is what the testimony is during the hearing, is that this is not an expungement. They're not wiping away the record clean. These things will still be visible. It's just a sort of a demonstration by the court that Mr. Brunson has followed through with his sentence and punishment in the court, in view of the court. You know, they're willing to sort of set aside.
Was the court instructed of that fact by the state or the appellant?
I believe both sides multiple times. There's also subsection 5 to consider, which the court may grant the offender's petition and issue an order setting aside the conviction when, in the opinion of the court, the order will be in the best interest of the offender and consistent with the public welfare. Again, you know, it's a fairly broad standard, and I'm in sort of an awkward position because the state made clear several times that it did not oppose the set aside and that it had participated in several of the set asides for Mr. Brunson.
What's the effect of that state's position in this case?
Well, again, there's
the state, the county attorney.
Yes.
Not the attorney general.
The factors that are listed under statute don't make a case for the consideration of whether or not the state, you know, opposes or agrees with the set aside.
You're not suggesting that a trial judge must simply approve one of these applications if the county attorney does not oppose it?
Yeah, absolutely not. The statute does not require that. I don't think that is generally and that is part of the practice that is discussed during the hearing, is whether or not these things have just sort of been rubber stamped or not. And the county attorney makes clear that, you know, in other cases and other set asides, they have made offers of almost the exact same exhibits to get those things set aside in other cases.
Does the fact that other cases have been set aside have any bearing on the judge's decision in this case?
Again, I don't see that in the statute. I don't read anywhere in the statute that other set asides, you know, make it more or less likely or make a grant, you know, requires the court to consider those things or consider more of those things. Again, the statute really just sort of concerns itself with the offender after sentencing of this case. So in theory,
if the trial court had granted the request to set aside, would the state be here arguing that that was an abuse of discretion?
I wouldn't think so, and I certainly probably wouldn't, I wouldn't understand exactly what we would be, and being able, I don't know what we'd have left to argue, I guess, at that point.
Do you think the state views these proceedings as adversarial at all? I mean, judging from the fact that the state showed up to all of them but didn't oppose any of them, what do we take from that?
Not having been the state, representing the state, you know, in those proceedings, I can't speculate. I would say that in this particular case, the state made clear that they are familiar with Mr. Brunson's case. They're familiar with his prior history. They're familiar with him and the process that they're working with, and are in agreement that this is perhaps a positive step forward for Mr. Brunson, without putting too much words into the deputy county attorney's mouth.
Would it be fair to ask if this is a reflection of your position, that the outcome is fine, it's supported by the record, and this court should ignore the trial court's musings on the statute?
I don't think so. I don't think that that's exactly what our brief sets forth. I think that there are sort of comments there. There are comments present on the record regarding Mr. Brunson's criminal history that I think are valid. And I think that they are supported by the record. But then you have other comments, specifically calling into the question the effectiveness and cost effectiveness of Mr. Brunson's chosen representation in this case. Drawing from Patno, you have sort of the invoking of a reasonable person standard. Would a reasonable person looking at that hearing then think, you know, this judge has got something else going on here besides maybe just the criminal history? And I think that there are things in the record that the state is wondering whether or not that is sort of playing at the water's edge or is actually kind of, you know, ankle and knee deep at that point. And we are, you know, with the case law being what it is, we're not entirely sure if one, that standard from Patno applies because there you're talking about sentencing, one, and then two, you know, in the context of a set aside, given the broad grant given by statute, does that also play? I'm not sure. If there are no further questions, the state would submit. Thank you.
Thank you. How much time did we take the state over?
1 minute and 35 seconds.
We'll add that to the remaining time for rebuttal. You may approach and proceed. May need to give our timekeeper a second. Caught up here. You may proceed.
Your Honor, since I do have limited time today, are there any questions off the bat I can answer for you? Well, then I would like to make 3 points in response to opposing counsel's argument. First, the appellee has correctly pointed out that there is a broad grant of discretion in these set-aside cases, but there are bounds to a court's discretion. With limitless discretion, there could be no appeal of any cases on the basis of an abuse of discretion.
You're not suggesting that if the counsel for the state below does not oppose an application of this kind, that the trial court abuses its discretion by not approving it?
No, Your Honor. In regards to the county attorney's approval of this set aside, we do think that it should have been taken into consideration by the trial court.
How do you know it wasn't?
There was nothing on the record to reflect whether it was or wasn't. It was kind of glanced over during the hearing. And
doesn't that take us back to specific findings?
Yes, Your Honor. It's our position that it would be beneficial to have specific findings, but when there's not, all we have to look at when we get a denial of Mr. Brunson's petition is what is on the record. And looking at the record in this case, we believe that the trial court abused its discretion, giving the multiple comments regarding Mr. Brunson's, not his criminal history, that's appropriate, but given the comments about the speculation towards his future, and given the concern about publicity.
Doesn't the statute require the judge to speculate about the future? Isn't one of the factors the likelihood that the offender will not engage in further criminal activity? Isn't that forward-looking?
Yes, Your Honor, that factor is forward-looking, but that's not the type of speculation we had in this case. The speculation that was in this case was taking Mr. Brunson's criminal history and speculating whether he would commit violent offenses in the future, which there was no history of him committing violent offenses. And we believe in totality, the past 6 years leading up to this set aside petition, that he had committed no criminal offenses since 2016. And looking at that, we believe that he was sufficiently rehabilitated, and that indicates that fourth factor.
Since you say this speculation is inappropriate for looking at the future, what speculation could the court make? Could the court speculate that he would never commit another crime? Would that be okay?
Well, I think that is appropriate speculation. I think the line—
Is that because it benefits your client?
No, Your Honor. I think that it is important to keep in consideration that fourth factor, future looking. But in this case, the speculation seems to be wildly inappropriate given the nature of it. It doesn't have any bearing on the facts or the law in this case.
Could you have asked for the judge to recuse herself from the case after the hearing before ruling?
That was not considered in this case, Your Honor. We moved for a direct appeal, but it potentially could have been.
By failing to do so, did you waive the bias claim?
I don't believe so, no. And in closing, for the reasons discussed in our brief and here today, we ask that this court either reverse the trial court's decision or alternatively remand this matter to a different trial court with instructions on applying the broad statutory factors. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the arguments. The case is submitted. The court is adjourned. Counsel are excused.